This episode is brought to you by Verizon Media, where massive audiences go for trusted content, connections, and commerce. They're putting their media partners in the middle of the action with their omni-channel advertiser and publisher solutions.
Hello, welcome to Social Distancing with Friends, a new podcast from AdExchanger about how COVID-19 has rocked our personal and professional worlds. I'm Allison Weisbrot, senior editor at AdExchanger, reporting from White Plains, New York, and I'm talking with Mike Law, who's the president of Amplify at Dentsu Aegis Network. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hi, Allison. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Was that your title? Did I get that right?
You did get that correct, yes.
So where are you right now?
I am in my dining room. I live in Sayville out on Long Island, thankfully far removed from New York City, and enjoying a semi-sunny day.
What's the vibe like in Sayville? It's pretty quiet, I bet.
It is pretty quiet. And, you know, having been in the city, well, 6 weeks ago now, feeling some of that tension and talking to lots of clients who are caught up in the COVID stories and watching the news, it feels a little disconnected. I thankfully live on a street that's right across from some water. So it's like a track outside my house. There's people running and riding bikes and walking constantly during the day. But if you go to the end of the street and into town, you immediately see all the stores closed and the reality of what's going on. So it's like the tale of two worlds for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. And are you with family? Do you have kids?
I do. I have two kids. They are teenagers. And they are here on the weekends. They are the perfect ages for this. They're in seventh and ninth grade, so they're pretty much homeschooling themselves. You know, just trying to keep them on track a little. But you know, they're sad to be missing their not seeing their friends other than over Teams or Zoom, and not being able to play sports, I think is hurting them and me too. I miss being on hot baseball fields or at a volleyball tournament.
Yeah, for sure. Well, are they getting outside at all? Are you throwing the ball around just so they can have a little bit of that feeling?
Oh yeah, for sure. There's lots of bike riding. There's lots of baseball and basketball in the backyard. And we're looking forward to it warming up so maybe we can get the paddle boards in and the canoes and start to take advantage of the water.
Oh, that's fun. You're lucky you're near some water.
Yes, very lucky.
And that your kids aren't toddlers, right?
I am so thankful that I don't live in either a studio apartment in New York City and that I don't have toddlers. I'm so sympathetic and empathetic to all those people who are challenged with that. I feel pretty lucky with my current setup versus what I've heard from others.
So right now you're in your dining room. Is that where you normally work, or do you have like a home office?
I do have a home office, but I moved out of it after a couple of weeks because it felt pretty lonely upstairs in a pretty much windowless room. I moved downstairs where there's some bright sunshine coming in. And when I bought the house just a few months ago, the first thing I wanted to buy was the dining room table. I never thought I would use it quite this much. So I'm happy to be able to be putting it to good use. I moved from one end to the other to at least get a semi different point of view during the day.
Yeah. Get those creative juices flowing, right?
Exactly.
So how are you keeping in touch with your teams? Like, how has the whole remote working situation been going for Dentsu and Amplify?
Yeah, you know, I think it's been going really well. I mean, the way that the teams have acclimated to this situation has been really unbelievable. I'm so proud of the teams. And I kind of said, you know, it's something we would have never thought that we would need to do, but I always knew that if we had to, we could, I guess. So the way the teams have reacted has been amazing. Obviously, lots of video conferencing calls. I try to encourage all of the meetings we have to put on your camera. It helps people stay a bit more focused. But I will also say that after a week or so of it, we realized that people were getting a bit exhausted. So some teams do like no camera Wednesday our leadership team has a Friday lunch with cameras on. So everybody's eating a little bit of lunch while we're just catching up on regular things. I've also tried to institute, like, you know, I think about the people who I would have walked by in the hallway during the day and said hi to. So I just reach out to them over messaging somehow and say, hey, how are you, checking in? So they may not necessarily be on my team, but people who I had seen around the office. So, you know, really great how everybody's stayed connected. And I think it's helped people keep their spirits up a little bit to get reached out to, or to, you know, stay connected with their teams. We started a group chat around all the sports things going on just to feel like we had some office banter.
Are there sports things going on?
Well, yeah, there's lots of things going on with trades and lots of speculation of when things may come back. I think, thankfully, the NFL, you know, the draft is tonight. So the NFL has kept people talking. And then, of course, any kind of speculation of any game that could possibly be played gets everybody excited.
Are you a big sports fan?
I'm definitely a sports fan, and I think I'm more of a sports fan now than I ever knew. When you don't have something, you realize how much you miss it. So, but yeah, I think I would love to see any type of game. I might even, as a diehard Red Sox fan, I might even watch the Yankees if that was the only choice.
Oh my God, you're a Reds! I don't think we can talk anymore.
It's the one rule with my kids. They can like any sports team they want, except they have to like the Red Sox.
They have to hate the Yankees.
Hate the Yankees, love the Red Sox. Other than that, they're good to go. They can like any other team they want.
That's funny. So, yeah, you bring up morale. Like, how is morale for your teams? Like, you know, we've been home for about a month and a half now. Like you said, the video conferencing 24/7 is getting a little bit fatiguing for some people. Like, how are you keeping spirits high?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, we're trying to do different things when we bring the teams together. One of the groups in the Amplify team, in their weekly meeting, they pick a different thing, different theme. So one week it was baby pictures. The next week they had some people give inspirational stories. So I think it's, you know, just kind of trying to keep some of that personality and personability into the teams. That, you know, I think the morale is good. And like, even when we were in the office, there can be good days and there can be bad days. And I think it's just everybody supporting. The one thing that I've stressed kind of from the beginning is just remember, we're a community. We're all here to help each other. And if, you know, if you're somebody who's home and you do have a little kid and you need a few extra hours in the morning, find somebody that, you know, somebody will come and help you and get you through that morning, not being able to take care of the kid, but helping you with the work that you need to do. So act as a community and be there for each other the same way that you would be in the office. So, you know, like being in the office any day, there you can have a good day and a bad day. And I've also said to the teams, just be transparent about it and say, look, tomorrow morning I need a couple extra hours, or I'm not gonna be able to do that until tonight. If you can help manage that, it makes it much easier for everyone. So I'm again just so proud of the teams and the way they've reacted. It's definitely been some of the hardest work that we've all ever had to do, because everything is so new. So it's not just a lot of work, it's very challenging and difficult work that's changing on a day-to-day basis. So you're feeling that at the end of every day. I know that I myself have hit the wall a couple times and just needed to step away for a little bit.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're working more now just because you're like, you wake up, you're on your computer, and then it's like all of a sudden it's time for dinner?
Yes. The days go by very fast. And as you can attest, because I was a few minutes late to this recording, you know, no longer is it because you have to walk down the hall, but you just, you know, these calls are overlapping. You need to build time into your calendar just for, you know, to find 20 minutes to eat some lunch or do something. But yeah, the days do feel a little longer. I think that everybody has maybe, you know, 6 weeks in now started to say, okay, there needs to be a start and an end to every day. But that gets very hard. And you know, we are trying to solve a lot of challenges for our clients and for our partners and for our own internal business. So it does take a little extra work. But I think we've tried to be conscious of, when you go to pick up the phone and call somebody and realize it's 8 o'clock, you probably wouldn't have done that 2-4 months ago. So, you know, maybe that's not the right thing to do now either. So I think everyone's building some new boundaries.
I mean, right now you would probably be in the thick of upfront negotiations, or at least upfronts would be coming up really soon. And I know that's a really big focus in your role. What are the conversations like? I mean, there's no new production happening. There's no events. What are you talking to networks about and clients?
Well, I would say that first off, we're talking about the upfront just as much as we would be on any other year. We're just talking about different things. And, you know, there's three kind of main triggers to any given marketplace. And those are the traditional ones around supply and demand, which we would typically be talking a lot about. But now the added element of timing and when should the upfront happen? When will the upfront happen? Will the upfront happen? There is not one answer to any of those questions other than some sort of marketplace will happen. And I just think we'll see lots of very client-specific transactions and negotiations happening throughout, you know, the rest of the year, just like we always have. While there's been theoretically an upfront marketplace, let's say it happens Memorial Day to 4th of July over the past few years, there's been things that happened before that and things that happen after that. And every client is doing what's best for their business. And I think we'll continue to just see those very customized and bespoke solutions needing to be delivered based on what we're hearing from our clients. But yeah, we're talking about the upfront just as much as we always would. We're just talking about different aspects of it.
So are there clients that are ready to commit money right now? Or is that just, I mean, is there anything to commit to?
Well, that's a great question on the, is there anything to commit to? And I think on the supply side, it's a big open question about, is sports going to come back in third quarter? Is it going to come back in fourth quarter? What is entertainment supply going to look like? So while the networks are still receiving lots of scripts and being able to approve what a script might look like, when they go to shoot, what will production space look like? How much space will there be on lots to shoot? And can you have, you know, 25 cameramen in a room shooting a show 2 inches away from each other? So there, and how does that look in New York versus California or Florida or Chicago and different places? So I think there's a lot more to the comeback of the production. So you've got a big question around sports. What does it look like and when does it come back? And some questions around entertainment. And of course, the networks are in a good position. They have lots of libraries that they can utilize. But at some point, you know, original productions will become important. So that might be the biggest unknown right now. And I think an important part of the discussions that we're having is understand, well, what are we buying? We don't want to commoditize this to just being about we're buying something and we'll figure out exactly what it is later. You want to have some understanding of what that supply actually is.
Right, because I'm sure there's implications for branding and awareness, and the audience that's going to watch the show might be different. So you have to have some sense of like what you're buying before you just commit money.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's always been the argument that when we buy in May and June, that schedules shift throughout the year, and fundamentally they do. A show might move from Thursday at 10 to Tuesday at 8, or you might move from a comedy to a drama. But right now there's even more unknowns about what will be available and who will be watching, the stickiness of the trends that we're seeing now. Like, will people continue to accelerate towards streaming post-COVID or whatever post-COVID looks like? Will TV ratings stick? And I think a great point that's been brought up by somebody on my team is about sports. And, you know, the NBA finals are typically in June. So you have a set of advertisers who always buy the NBA finals because they've been a mainstay. And then you have a set of advertisers who buy them because it's in June. So now if the NBA finals are in August, that's a whole different set of advertisers who may be saying, oh, now all of a sudden back to school brands are buying the NBA finals. So it really does change the outlook of what the available inventory will be at any given time. And what you're looking at doesn't match the historical calendar that you used to look at.
Right. So given all this uncertainty, you said that you are still talking to the networks and to your clients. Like, what are the conversations about? Just like, you know, speculating on timing and things like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's exactly what it is. It's on the timing. It's trying to understand from the partners, what do their plans look like? So that I would give a lot of credit to the networks. They've been very transparent, especially on the sports side, about here's what we know and here's what we're optimistically thinking. And here's, to be honest, what we are a little bit nervous about. And here's how we're planning to fill between now and then. So I love the transparency that we've gotten from those partners around sports and entertainment. We've been able to get access to, you know, heads of entertainment, heads of sports, and they've been great about helping us better understand what is what is going on to the best that they know. I mean, I think that anybody who says that they know exactly what's going to happen is wrong, is lying. I mean,
lying.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know it's a terrible analogy, but nobody thought oil would have cost $32 the other day. Nobody can predict what's going to happen in these markets. So I think it's just important that we take in as much information. So the main goal that I have in these conversations is, you know, trying to inform my clients to the best of knowledge that I know today of what's going on and how do we react to that based on what their business needs are. So the consistency and frequency and transparency of these conversations is what's critical to just have as much knowledge as you can and then make the best decision based on what your goals are.
And you brought up streaming before, which has been a huge, you know, beneficiary of everyone staying at home. I mean, it was growing before, but, and I know that, you know, certain players like Roku and Hulu have had really big upfront presences. They'll also be affected by production shutdowns, but they also have, you know, huge libraries of back catalog stuff. So I don't know, do you see more active conversations going on with those players right now?
I wouldn't say any more active with them versus anybody else. I think, you know, Hulu and Roku, I think I've been known to say they're like the Kleenex of OTT and CTV world. There is so much opportunity and supply in that space. And yeah, they will be affected just as much as anybody else by the production schedules. They obviously have huge, vast libraries of content, but so does NBC Universal and Disney and Fox and all the other channels. So the library of content will help, but the original content typically can be what drives people. And I think for the streamers, if you look at Amazon Prime or Netflix, they do have a library of content that we've all seen around movies and shows. But think about all the shows, even I'm sure you, Allison, like there's things that your friends have been like, have you seen this show yet? And you haven't. So this is giving you a chance to go back to what is new to you, but not new to other people. So I think that is a benefit for them as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just started season one of The Sopranos.
I mean, perfect, perfect. And I've gone back, I think, you know, in addition to, I mean, geez, this is going to be bad. But I mean, I've gone back and watched Entourage from season one through the movie. I've also gone back and watched Cheers. I mean, I forgot what Cheers was like, you know, when I was growing up as a kid. It's a great show. We watched a little Magnum PI the other night. So there's these great classic shows that you have forgotten all about. So again, those vast libraries of content that you may or may not have seen is pretty amazing.
And do brands want to put money against that stuff? Like, I don't know, shows maybe that are popping right now on Hulu, like Seinfeld or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the less talked about things with all these streaming numbers is, remember, a lot of those aren't ad supported. So Disney Plus and Netflix,
right,
all those people going there is great for the content and for their subscription models. But from an advertiser standpoint, that the opportunity is less. But brands want to go and need to go where consumers are going, which is to these streaming services. I do think that it's important to have a balance between context and contextual targeting along with your audience being there. So you want to be in the right place at the right time, not just any content that shows up. So yeah, I think it's important to know exactly where we're airing, and the transparency of what those schedules look like is critical.
So if this year kind of, you know, everything's up in the air, but if you're able to sort of get through the year and book some media buys without having the actual typical upfront, you know, what changes do you think might stick to the process? There's been a lot of debate over the years about, is the upfront necessary? And, you know, I know you and I talked about this not too long ago. So I don't know, is there anything that you see as could be permanent?
Yeah, I think it's a little too early to know what will be permanent, but I do think that you're going to see a bit of change come, and that will come from every side of the equation. I know Disney and Bob Iger have been on the record about, is this a time to relook at even how they think about pilot season? Does it have to be specifically right now? And what do upfront presentations look like in the future? And I think for advertisers, recalibrating potentially when they're doing their deals and what the framework looks like. I think, you know, right now they're, while again, we have this kind of defined or undefined upfront market in May and June, I think it's so important to know that there are deals that happen outside of that. There are some clients who do calendar year, upfront broadcast year. There's people who do 5-quarter deals, 2-year deals, 6-month deals. So we'll just see, a bit of focus on that. I think what's important for clients right now is balancing the flexibility that they need with the benefits of long-term commitments. And those are the two levers that we're looking at with clients is, you know, what is the risk that I'm willing to take on for the benefit that I'm willing to receive? And that's different for every brand and every category.
Totally. Well, speaking of permanent changes, do you see anything about agency life that might stick after this?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, the two things that come to mind is obviously everybody's figured out how to work from home. And we were already at Dentsu already in a very flexible work environment where people did work from home quite a bit. And we give our teams that flexibility. I do think that people have probably gotten a little bit more used to it. I know personally, I have about 4 hours of commuting a day in total. So I in some ways, I love that I get an extra 4 hours, although I haven't put it to very good use yet. So I think that you'll see people probably, you know, understand how to remote work better. The big question to me is around airplanes. And, you know, I for one, flew quite a bit before all this, and realizing that you can connect with clients very quickly over video conferencing. So what do travel and expenses look like moving forward, and what's the impact to conferences and events? I think, you know, there'll be a re-examination, but like anything, there'll be a big difference between what happens in the next 6 to 12 months and then 8 years from now, do we go back to exactly where we were? But everything will be a learning experience. And I think I keep trying to find the silver linings in every one of these things. And I think we're all much better at using video chat. That's for sure.
I think 8 years from now, we'll just be like holograms showing up in their office.
You could be sitting at my dining room table with me.
Exactly. Doing this podcast. So what are you doing for fun? I mean, you're watching Entourage over again, besides on the TV front, like what are you doing on the weekends and just to feel happy and a little bit sane?
I obviously trying to spend a lot of time with my kids, which has been a great distraction. Last week we made pasta from scratch. We've never done that before. So I think
what kind of pasta?
We tried to make spaghetti. That proved difficult. It became much thicker, but at the end of the day, it did taste like pasta. So we'll take it. And we all survived. I love to play golf. So thankfully the golf courses around here are still semi-open. So I've been able to do that a little bit. My Peloton is getting lots of good use, which is good. And I think what I've tried to do, kind of to some of our points before, is just disconnect a bit on the weekends, because the first few weeks it was 7 days and I think you can get mentally exhausted. So just try to disconnect, enjoy kind of what's around, a lot of time with the kids and friends and family from a distance. A lot, my parents even know how to use FaceTime now, which is nice. So we get to see them a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm always laughing at my dad when he's on Zoom because he just like doesn't really know how to use it.
Yeah, my dad still picks up even a FaceTime call and puts it to his ear. That we can see him.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I hope that you hang in there, make some more pasta with your kids and enjoy the water when it gets warmer. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Tune in next week to hear more from Verizon Media. By connecting billions of data insights, their demand-side platform makes it easier to deliver an omni-channel strategy with precision and transparency. Visit verizonmedia.com/advertising to learn more.